Hello and welcome to the Big 12 preseason preview edition of the NBC Sports College Basketball Talk podcast. My name is Rob Doster. If you're listening to this, it is probably Wednesday, October 18th. That's the day that we're publishing this podcast. We're going to get into the Big 12 in a second. Before we do that, just a couple of programming notes. First of all, we are still taking submissions for the moment that you fell in love with college basketball. If you go to any one of these apps that you listen to podcasts on, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play or wherever it is that you listen to these apps for free, please leave us a rating, leave us a review, and tell us about the moment that you fell in love with college basketball. Those ratings and reviews help us within the metrics in those apps. And if you have a good story about how you fell in love with the sport, we will read it on this podcast. The other thing that I want to remind everyone today, the way that we do these podcasts, the conference preview podcast, that is that we'll go through each team in alphabetical order, breaking down new additions, players that graduated, what the expectations are for each team this season, and giving a bold prediction for what is going to happen with that team this season. So without further ado, let's get into the breakdown. And I'm going to start things off by talking about Baylor. Baylor had something of a weird year last year. They went from being outside the top 25 in the preseason to at one point being the number one team in the country by the first week of January. And that is when things kind of started to fall apart. They went 9-6 in their last 15 games. They lost in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, and they were smacked around by South Carolina in the Sweet 16. What's more, they probably lost their two best players in Jonathan Motley and Ish Wainwright to graduation and with Motley to the NBA. What that left is a roster with a bunch of good role players, but they don't really have a star. Manu LeCompte is probably the guy that you might call their best player at this point, but even he is more of somebody that is proven to be an above-average Big 12 starter that maybe has a flair for the moment. I'm not sure that he's quite what you would consider a star or a guy that you want to be your best player, or even capable of putting together a first-team All-Big 12 caliber season, not with the kind of talent that's in the backcourt in this league. Joe Achiuwa is a unique talent, given his ability to protect the rim and the way that he can space the floor on the offensive end of the floor. But he's also more of just a piece to the puzzle. He's not really a guy that can go get anything for himself. You know, he blocks shots and he hits open threes when they're left from him. You're not going to dump the ball to him on the block and expect him to make a move. He's not going to go out and, you know, get you 20 points a night the way that Motley did. Terry Mastin has been productive, but he's never averaged more than 15 minutes in a season. They have some good freshmen coming in, like Tyson Jolly and Mark Vidal and Tristan Clark, and they have some solid role players, Kim Clore, Jake Lindsey, guys like that. But there's nothing on that roster that's really all that intimidating. Like, when you look at them, there isn't really someone that you say, okay, we're going to have to stop him. We're going to have to wait, find a way to slow him down. They're just a bunch of guys, you know? They don't really have any dudes. They just have guys, if that makes sense. And at the end of the day, I think that Scott Drew is still one of the more underrated coaches in the country. Like, we still make the jokes about Scott Drew, and we still laugh about him. So I guess what my bold prediction is going to be is that this team is not only going to get to the NCAA tournament, but they're going to win a game in the NCAA tournament. Travis, why don't you tell me why I'm wrong?
Well, I mean, I think a big part of it's really going to depend on LeCompte. Like, what can he grow into as probably the featured player on that team? Can he be like 75% of what Pierre Jackson was for Baylor a few years ago, when I think Jackson led the Big 12 in scoring and assists? Like, I don't think LeCompte can even really get super close to approaching that, but can he be, you know, like a B plus version of Pierre Jackson? If he can do that, then I think you're right. If he can't, then I think you're looking at a roster that maybe just doesn't have, to use your terms, the dudes to get it done, or maybe even the fit to really kind of excel in the Big 12 and win a game in the NCAA tournament. But if LeCompte can to really grow into that featured role, which I'm not going to rule him out, I think he's a good player. And Rob, you mentioned his kind of flair for the moment, the flair for the dramatic. I think sometimes when you see that in guys, that's an indication that they're, you know, maybe ready for a bigger role, or at least capable of getting that opportunity. So if he can do that, then I like the Bears. If he can't, I think that this team is probably looking for at a season where it's going to be a little bit of a step back.
Scott?
Yeah, I am concerned about the lack of star power and replacing a guy like Motley. You know, you look at this team last year, and we had a lot of question marks about them, but we at least knew that Motley was going to be the type of guy who could be a breakout player, and he was. And with this year's team, I think there's plenty of guys who you can, you know, kind of hang your hat on for different moments, but who's going to step up in crunch time? Is it going to be LeComp? Is it going to be someone else that we're not talking about right now? I think their defense and their front court is going to be plenty steady. They're obviously going to defend and get stops and protect the rim with Joel Lualakul down low. But, you know, it's just really the type of team with Baylor where I'm not sure where the go-to guy comes from, and that's my biggest question mark.
You know what my biggest question mark is? How do you actually say Joe's name?
That one escaped me just now, too, as you could tell.
Is it Lualakul? That's what I thought it was.
I think it is. I just butchered it pretty badly.
Yeah, I think you had it, Rob.
Yeah, of course I had it. But here, I want to go back on one more point and talk about Scott Drew. And I know we talk about this a lot on this podcast, and I think that it's kind of this viewpoint is growing a little bit. But if you look at what he's done with Baylor in terms of, you know, the last 4 years, they've made each of the NCAA tournament, each of the last 4 years. They haven't been lower than a six seed. They've been a three seed twice during that stretch. He's been to five of the last six of the last eight, and seven of the last 10 NCAA tournaments. In four of those years, Baylor was at least a three seed. He's turned this into arguably one of the top 25 to 30 best college programs currently running. Maybe not the best jobs per se, but probably one of the 25 to 30 best programs. And coming from where it was after Dave Bliss, like, I don't think that it can be understated just how much of a rebuilding job that he had. And, you know, I think that he deserves credit for that. And I think at this point, I don't want to put him in the same conversation like we talked about on the Big Ten podcast, right? Like Bo Ryan and the way that we always kind of viewed them, or Mike Bray that we talked about on the ACC podcast, where you just kind of assume that they're going to be good without, you know, really worrying about who the players are on that roster. I don't know if we can quite Scott Drew into that conversation yet, but you know, at some point we kind of have to say, okay, maybe he's actually pretty good at what he's doing.
I think it's always going to be hard for people to say, for a couple of reasons, but I think the first one is just he does some really unorthodox stuff on the floor, like especially when it comes to his use of his timeouts, the way that they play defense. But at some point, like the results have got to speak for themselves. But like, especially when I feel like we get on coaches a lot for doing the conservative thing over and over again. So when you got a guy like Drew that's doing some unorthodox stuff, which it's unorthodox and it still doesn't make sense to me, but somehow it still seems to work, you got to give him a little bit of credit for that. And you know, at some point when you've got it's like you're starting to look at what, a 15-year track record with him? Like the results speak for themselves.
Travis, you're the Iowa State beat writer. Tell me all about the Cyclones.
Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting year for Iowa State. It's essentially, in some ways, year one for Steve Prohm, even though it's his third year at the helm of the program. They're losing four senior starters off last year's NCAA tournament team that won the Big 12 tournament as well. And all four of those guys were all league guys, and all four of them were holdovers, at least recruited by and committed to the Fred Hoiberg staff before Fred left for the Bulls in 2015. So it's really looking at a total reboot, essentially, for Iowa State basketball right now in year three under Steve Prohm. They got one returning starter and sophomore center, Solomon Young. They've got two other returning contributors in guard Donovan Jackson and wing Nick Weiler Babb. And then after that, it's all new faces, the most notable of which is Lindell Wigginton, who went to Oak Hill. One recruiting service had him ranked as a top 25 guy. They're extremely excited about him. He kind of fits more of the mold at point guard that I think Steve Prohm is comfortable with, where you look at what he was able to do with like Campaign and Isaiah Cannon, explosive guys at that point guard position, as opposed to Monte Morris the last 2 years, who, you know, was as good as any point guard in the country, but not exactly an explosive player, more of a steady conservative player. So they're really excited about him, and he could be the difference between, you know, them being bad and mediocre, I think, or maybe even a little bit better. The rest of the roster is a mix of other freshmen and transfers. They got Zoran Talley, who I think they're pretty high on as a graduate transfer from Old Dominion that actually has 2 years eligibility left. They went to shore up their interior with Graduate transfers as well, getting Jeff Beverly from San Antonio and Hans Brace from Princeton. Brace has had ACL surgeries the last 2 years and hasn't been yet cleared for contact, so they're still kind of waiting on him. But they've got just a lot of new faces, and anytime you're replacing four senior starters, you know, something like 80% of your scoring, you're going to take a step back, even though I think the coaching staff really likes the group that they have. But it's just, in this day and age, unless you're Kentucky or Duke or Arizona, you don't reboot and rebuild with four new starters and, you know, essentially a brand new roster. So I think if you're going to look for a bold prediction for Iowa State, I think you look at it more at the individual level at a guy like Lindell Wigginton. I think maybe he's got a shot to be like a third team All Big 12 player. So that'll be my bold prediction, is that you'll see Lindell Wigginton as an All League player this year.
You just didn't want to have to say that they're going to be a bottom three team of the Big 12 on this podcast, did you?
Oh, I've been saying that since March. Like, Iowa State fans are not happy with my, what they call pessimism or haterism about the Cyclones this year. Like, I mean, you don't replace four senior starters off a good team and expect to be an NCAA tournament team. And like, Iowa State fans aren't ready to concede that point. But I've been saying this since the day the season ended last year when they lost to Purdue in the round of 32. That, like, the NIT, if they get to the NIT, that's a success for a team that's going to be as young and inexperienced and unproven as Iowa State is. If I've seen them picked last in some Big 12 projections, I think Oklahoma State's going to be worse. But, like, if you put Iowa State ninth, I think that's a pretty fair place to put them, given the questions on the roster and the unprovenness of the roster.
Yeah, and I think it also says a lot about TCU and Texas Tech and the fact that they aren't just absolutely dreadful anymore. But I'm with you, man. Like, I honestly have no idea what to expect from a single person on this roster at all. No idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. Like, even the guys like Solomon Young, their lone returning starter, like, that dude didn't have to do a lot last year when you've got guys like Monte Morris, Matt Thomas, Naz Mitrulong, Deontay Burton. Like, you had to rebound, play defense, and run to the rim. Now you're the lone returning starter. Your expectation levels have changed. We don't really know what he can do because he wasn't asked to get outside his comfort zone very much. And the same thing like a Donovan Jackson. Like, he made some big shots. He hit a huge shot to help them beat Kansas and Allen Fieldhouse last year, but he also only played 5 minutes at West Virginia in their last regular season game of the year. Nick Weiler-Babb had showed like glimpses of, you know, being a solid player, but then also had a crisis of confidence the last 3 weeks of the season where he wouldn't shoot the ball from outside of 4 feet. So, like, you're just asking a lot of, even your returners are going to be in wholly different roles. And then when you've got guys, you know, that are transferring from Old Dominion, San Antonio, Princeton, like, I don't know how you could possibly have a reasonable set of expectations beyond just kind of throwing your hands up in the air and saying, we'll see.
Scott, what's your take?
I think Steve Prohm has done a nice job of assembling a roster that can at least be competitive this year. As Travis alluded to, I don't have much faith in guys like Beverly and Hans Braz and Talley adjusting right away and being world beaters. But I think that given the losses that he had and the roster situation that he was going with, he at least added some guys that can compete this year. I like the recruiting class he has coming in for next year. I think there's some bright future ahead for Iowa State, but this is not the year for the Cyclones.
All right, let's move on. Scott, I believe it's you, and you're going to be talking a little bit about the Kansas Jayhawks.
Well, for the 14th consecutive year, the Jayhawks will be looking to win a Big 12 regular season championship after doing so once again last year. This year can be a daunting task, however. They lose quite a bit of proven talent in guys like Frank Mason, who is our returning national player of the year. I'm sorry, last year's player of the year. Josh Jackson, who is a top five draft pick and looks to be dominating so far in the NBA preseason. And Landon Lucas, who is a fifth-year senior in the middle, who probably didn't get enough credit for how well he played for the Jayhawks the past two seasons. Carlton Bragg also officially gone after his McDonald's All-American tenure ended in disappointment. A couple question marks for the Jayhawks this year in terms of depth and overall ability in the front court. They're going to have Devontae Graham back. He was tremendous last season playing off the ball from Mason. He will likely be asked to be the main point guard this season with the ball in his hands. He's been a first-team All-American candidate for us. I think we all have high hopes for the season that Graham will have. He certainly will be one to watch for the Jayhawks in terms of awards, honors, and things like that. Playing alongside Graham in the backcourt this year will be Malik Newman, a former Mississippi State transfer. He was a former highly touted McDonald's All-American who didn't see the scoring numbers that many predicted he would put up during his freshman year with Ben Howland. This should be a reboot year for him. He had a year to sit out under Bill Self. He knows what he's going to be capable of and asked to do now. I think he could be poised for a big scoring season, but it'll be interesting to see what else he's able to contribute. He's a little bit one-dimensional at times. Back on the wing will be Svi Mykhailiuk for center for his senior year, as well as LeGerald Vick for his junior year. Both of those guys have been steady rotation players for the Jayhawks the last few seasons. Svi is the type of guy who can shoot from all over. He's done a little bit more to make himself a more versatile player throughout his career, and it's hard to believe he's only a 20 to 21 year old senior after coming into Kansas so young early in his career. Vic should have more athleticism than Svi and should be able to do a little bit more defensively and on the glass. The front court's going to be a huge question for Kansas this year. They have to replace Lucas and his defensive consistency. That'll be done by Udoka Azubuike, a former McDonald's All-American, who was promising at the start of last year but was injured only 11 games into the season with a wrist injury. So again, he's proven himself a little bit, but not to the point where he's played starters minutes for a winning team. He'll be one to watch in the interior. And the powered forward spot is going to be fascinating for Kansas this year. They have a 6'10" freshman McDonald's All-American and Billy Preston, who has all the talent in the world to come in and take that spot. But he's also been a headache in some of the spots he's been in before. I see him getting into some arguments with Bill Self and maybe having some trying times, but he's definitely the guy that Kansas would like to put out on the four if they can. If not, they might have to look to go to a small ball lineup, having either Svi or Vic at the four. Mitch Lightfoot is the only kind of experienced returner in the front court. He's a 6'8" undersized sophomore himself. This group will get Sam Cunliffe, a transfer from Arizona State in December. He's a former top 50 prospect who should help with wing depth. But I see a lot of holes in this Kansas depth overall. That front court's got a huge question mark in terms of who plays the four and if they play a small ball lineup. And there isn't a lot of depth behind the guards as well. You have Marcus Garrett, a talented freshman coming in from Dallas. But is he going to be ready in case a guy like Graham or Newman gets hurt or in foul trouble? I think Kansas does have the talent to win the Big 12 once again. I think my bold prediction, though, is that they fall short of making a major NCAA tournament run. I don't like the makeup of this group. I think Preston's a major question mark who will not fit well with Bill Self, and I think that there's a lot of questions overall with the Jayhawks in this season.
Yeah, this group is just weird. Everything about this team is just, like, weird to me. And, you know, it starts with Devontae Graham. Right, he's played off the ball the last 3 years. He was a point guard in high school. He was a point guard in prep school. He was recruited to Kansas as a point guard, and he gets there, and all of a sudden, you know, Frank Mason turns into a guy that went from being like a fan favorite as a sophomore to an all-league player as a junior to the national player of the year as a senior. Right, so Devontae Graham kind of had to get forced off the ball, and now he's finally going to have a chance to have the ball in his hands. But we don't really know what to make of him as a point guard because I don't think we really have ever seen him play the point guard. Like, he was, I think calling him a 3-and-D guy for the last 2 years is probably not doing him justice, because I want to see he averaged 4 assists a game last year. But at the same time, like, he's not exactly been on the ball, and he hasn't really played the point guard for the last 3 years. So that adjustment is going to be interesting. The adjustment of Malik Newman and what he did in the offseason is going to be interesting. Where front court depth comes from is going to be interesting. I think the loss of Landon Lucas is probably going to hurt them more than anybody is going to be willing to recognize, because of the way that Lucas could kind of, you know, block shots and defend and just be a presence in the paint by the end of his career. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. The other part that's weird about it is that 3 of their 4 best players might actually be sitting out this year. You know, Charlie Moore is going to be a redshirt transfer from California. Both of the Lawsons, Diedrich and KJ, are going to be sitting out as transfers from Memphis. So, and then you have Sam Cunliffe, who is not going to be playing for the first half of the year. So not only are you going to only have 9 guys that are eligible to play this season, one of them won't even be able to play until December. But what's most interesting to me is that last year, Bill Self, he's always been a guy that's played 2 bigs. Like, that's what he's done. Him and Roy Williams have been 2 guys that were, you know, completely against this idea of going to small ball and playing small ball and playing a small ball 4 and spreading the floor and shooting threes. Like, that's just not what they were going to do. They were going to play 2 bigs. And then all of a sudden, you know, Josh Jackson shows up and Udoka Azubuike breaks his wrist. And you're looking at a situation where Bill Self suddenly has, like, the perfect perfect player to play a small ball for at the college level in Josh Jackson. You know, he's tough. He can block shots. He can rebound. He can play in the post. He can take a rebound and, you know, go coast to coast. He can make plays. He causes all kinds of mismatches for power forwards that want to try to guard him on the defensive end of the floor. But he doesn't have that guy this year, right? But he also doesn't really have a lineup. He basically has two big guys and Mitch Lightfoot. And neither of those big guys really profile as, like, the Perry Ellis type, you know, the kind of four that he's used to having. Neither of them look like Josh Jackson. None of the backcourt players look like Josh Jackson. Like, Svi is not a guy that is going to be able to do what Josh Jackson did. Sam Cunliffe isn't really a guy that's going to be able to do what Josh Jackson did. So who plays the small ball four for him? Or do they just play two bigs and hope that Billy Preston and Udoka Azubuike could play 40 minutes apiece? Or that Mitch Lightfoot, who never really proved that he could be you know, a Big 12 caliber player, can actually be a Big 12 caliber player off the bench? I don't know. It just everything about this team is weird. Everything about this team is trying to figure out how it fits together. Like, it just doesn't look like it fits. But they're probably still going to end up winning the Big 12 again. I don't know. Travis, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, like, you hit it there at the end. Like, when you talk about Kansas for the last 13 years, 14 years, however long it's been, you're not really talking about, for the most part, how they match up in the Big 12. Because at the end of the day, they're going to end up clearing the league by a couple games like they do almost every year. Or worst case scenario, they're going to tie for it, which I think they've done two or three times in this streak.
I think it's four.
Four times? Okay. So you're talking about how do they stack up against Duke, Arizona, Michigan State. And I think that's where they're going to have trouble, assuming, you know, all those teams are whole going into March, because they don't fit quite as well with what appears to be the dominant style of basketball in college basketball right now, which is obviously a trickle down from the NBA. And so if they can't get that figured out by mid-February, then I think they're going to be in trouble. But when it comes, and that's only in the context of the NCAA tournament and playing against the top teams in the country, I think when you look at the rest of the Big 12, that they're going to be able to get by on their talent and self's ability to just win games in the Big 12. That's all the guy does.
I don't know how it all comes together. Like, trying to figure out how all those pieces come together, just you end up going in circles, right? Because you can't play small because you don't really have a small ball for it. You know what would be great for them this year? If they could somehow file a waiver to get Dedrick Lawson eligible. Like, he is the piece they're missing, right? Like, he's a guy that if you have to play him at the five, you might be able to play him at the five a little bit. He'd be great as the four, you know, playing that Perry Ellis role. And he would give them depth. He would give them lineup versatility. He would allow them to, you know, not have to worry about playing Mitch Lightfoot. Am I being too harsh here on Mitch Lightfoot? Because I just don't think he's a guy that should be playing at Kansas.
He's a couple years away at minimum. I think you're right, Rob. He's not a guy who can step in this year and give huge minutes. You can score the, you know, the non-conference portion of the schedule. Once we get to Big 12 play, I don't see him being a factor.
He's a couple years away at minimum, and he's a sophomore. So what does that mean? By the time he's 25,
he's a 4 to 5 year guy like Landon Lucas was. You know, like Kansas,
like Josh Young. Yeah, like they've had dudes that are just, by the time they're at their end, they can play, but only in that limited role.
Yeah, even then, I don't know how I can trust a team that has Mitch Lightfoot as like their third big guy. But then again, like, it's also Kansas, right?
You're so fixated on Mitch Lightfoot right now.
Yeah, I really am. but I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's going to have to play. There's no way around it.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been interesting, I think, like, if Svi wouldn't have dropped the 20 pounds, like, if, because I think that's going to make it a lot harder for him to guard in the post. Like, would that have worked? Because obviously he can shoot it. He can run the wings. Like, would that have been an option that it probably isn't now that he's, you know, considerably lighter?
Well, see, I don't think
just put a weight vest on him when he needs to play the four so he could bulk up 20 pounds for those brief moments of the game.
I don't even know if that would be the answer, though. Because do you think he's tough enough to play in the post? What he could be 250 pounds. Do you think he's tough enough to play down there?
Like, the thing. I don't. You got to remember too. Like Scott, like, mentioned, he was 17 when he got to the league. So, like, when we talk about his toughness, it's probably being graded on an unfair curve there.
Yeah, I guess. But I just maybe toughness is the wrong word. But like physicality, you know, I just don't think he's a guy. Like, there was a mentality that Josh Jackson had to play that position, right? There's a mentality that, you know, Miles Bridges had to play that position. And you could see that immediately. But then you look at guys like Jabari Parker at Duke or Jason Tatum at Duke. one of the reasons that those teams kind of struggled when they had to go to those small ball lineups was because they didn't have those guys that were tough enough to play that small ball four role. But if you look at Duke, the team that won the national title playing that style was the one that had Justice Winslow playing that small ball four role. And what I'm saying is that I think I don't want to compare Sveed to them in terms of talent, but in terms of like the way that they play, he's much more like a Jabari Parker and a Jason Tatum that's kind of built around the offensive side of the ball more than anything on the defensive side of the ball than he is a Miles Bridges or a Josh Jackson or a Justice Winslow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting to see what Self can get out of him, though, because that's again the X factor of that he somehow is able to make this usually work by the end of the year.
All right, so before we move on, I just want to, Travis, give me your take on Devontae Graham and Scott, give me your take on Devontae Graham as well. We have him as a first-team preseason All-American. If you've looked at some of these other outlets, I know Sam Vecenie over at The Athletic and Matt Norlander at CBS Sports both have him as like their fourth or fifth best point guard in college basketball. So I'm just curious, what do we have him? Are we too bullish on him? Should we be more concerned about the fact that he's changing positions? Travis, why don't you start?
I'm not super concerned because, you know, Frank Mason had the ball in his hand a lot, no doubt, but they were playing, in my opinion, a dual point guard role. So I'm not super concerned about him, you know, quote unquote, changing positions. I think this is him moving to his natural position that, you know, he hasn't played it, I guess, full time or in a traditional sense for the last few years. But when you look at, you know, his skill set, his body type, I think this is where he's going to be at his best. So I'm not super concerned about where we have him. I think he's going to be dynamic. And I think when you look at that Kansas roster, he's going to be asked to shoulder a pretty big chunk of the offensive load that ultimately will justify him being, you know, a first teamer or a second team All-American.
I personally had him on second team All-American with Jalen Brunson above him. I know we talked about that a little bit on the All-American podcast, but I still think Graham's in line for a huge year, as you guys were saying. He's the type of guy who hasn't been asked to maybe have the main point guard responsibilities, as Travis alluded to, with sharing the responsibilities with Mason, and he still put up great numbers even not having those primary responsibilities. So I expect him to have a huge year for Kansas. Again, he's the type of guy who has more experience than most at the college level, and he's going to be counted on to produce from day one.
All right, let's move on. Kansas State, that's me. Bruce Weber last year, he more or less saved his job by getting that group to the NCAA tournament and winning a game. They won a playoff game against Wake Forest, if I am not mistaken or misremembering. This year, he is going to kind of have his work cut out for him. Wesley Iwundu, who was just so underrated, ended up being the 33rd pick in the 2017 NBA draft, so he's gone. But there are a couple of solid pieces returning. Kamau Stokes is kind of a little lightning rod of a scorer. They got Barry Brown back. They have Dean Wade back. All three of those guys are juniors. Xavier Sneed is back. They have a graduate transfer coming in from Mount St. Mary's named Mauro Salah, who is eligible immediately. He has 2 years there. But this group is kind of like Baylor to me in the sense that you look at them and you're just like, okay, like what really is on this roster, you know? Like Wesley Iwundu to me was kind of like, saying glue guy might be a little bit too strong because I think he was better than just being a role player. But he was kind of the piece that brought everything together. You know, he could bring the ball up if he had to. He could guard multiple positions. He can make threes. Like he gave them lineup versatility, he gave them roster versatility. He gave them a whole bunch of different things that they don't really have on the team this year. So you got some guys that can make plays, but I mean, when you have two little guards that are kind of score first almost, and you know, nothing else that you've really proven to be above average at the Big 12 level, you know, I look at that roster and I'm just kind of like, okay, well, what do you actually have here, Bruce? So I guess what my bold prediction for them is going to be is that we never actually think about Kansas State at all this season because they're just blah, right? Like they're going to end up getting their 18 wins. They're going to end up going like 8-10 in the Big 12, right? They're going to go to the NIT. They're never going to be in the bubble conversation. They're not going to beat anybody that they probably shouldn't be beating. They're not going to beat Kansas, and they're not going to win at West Virginia. But they're not going to be bad enough for Bruce Weber to lose his job, not after they made it to the tournament last season and he got that extension. So they're just going to be completely irrelevant. We're just never going to ever think about them and never going to discuss them and never going to have that conversation. And, you know, maybe that is exactly what Bruce Weber needed for this year. You've got to a tournament. You got a little bit of that heat off you. And now just please let everybody ignore me. Am I wrong? Scott, what's your take?
I think this team's a little bit better than you're giving them credit for. The backcourt in particular intrigues me. I liked what Kamau Stokes and Barry Brown were able to do in spots last year. Brown actually was really good at the start of Big 12 play. I just think he kind of tapered off a little bit. Dean Wade is experienced as well, but he's another guy who you can't count on to be consistent all the time. So if those three guys are at least a little bit better this year, they're all proven starters from an NCAA tournament team. But I just don't know where they replace Owundu's production, and I'm concerned about some of the front court depth that they're going to be putting in place that hasn't necessarily played in the Big 12 yet.
So I get what you're saying, man, but I guess what my point is, like, they're not going to be better than Kansas, right? They're not going to be better than West Virginia. Like, I don't think they're going to be better than Texas. I don't think they're going to be better than Baylor. You know, there's reasons to be a little bit more bullish on what TCU and Texas Tech have. You know, if we're going to talk about, like, some middle-of-the-pack Big 12 team, it's probably going to be Oklahoma, who has Trae Young. Or maybe a Texas team, if they don't end up being as good as some people think they will, because they have Mo Bamba. Or maybe it's Baylor, because, you know, oh, Scott Drew stinks again. I told you he couldn't coach. Whatever it is, like, I guess what my larger point was, like, there's just, what is there to actually talk about on this team at all? I don't know.
There's nothing sexy about Kansas State. You're absolutely right, Rob. But I do think that this backcourt could surprise some people, and that they're going to be a tough out, especially at home. Obviously, that building is going to be, again, a difficult place to play. But, yeah, there's not much sexy about the Wildcats this year.
Man, how much do they miss Jacob Pullen? There was a lot sexy about Jacob Pullen. I don't care. I said it. Travis, give me a take on Kansas State.
I like their backcourt fine, I guess, but I don't think it's going to be one of the best in the Big 12. I mean, I just don't think it's a very talented team. I don't think it's got NCAA tournament team written anywhere on it. And I'll be interested. You know, I know, Rob, you kind of just, you know, move past Bruce Weber's status there, I guess. I think people, like, I think there was a decent chunk of the fan base there that would have been okay with them missing the tournament last year, because it would have meant moving on from Bruce Weber. And I think, you know, fair or not, I think that there's a sizable chunk of the fan base that feels that way. So if they're blah this year or even a little bit worse, it'll be interesting to see. Because, like, that to me is, like, one of the worst places a program, not a head coach, but a program can be, where you're not terrible, but everybody is dissatisfied and unruly and angsty with your coach. Like, that's just a bad environment. And Kansas State certainly got there when they got blown out by Oklahoma last year. And then obviously righted the ship, and I think Bruce Weber deserves a lot of credit for that. But I end up really just disliking the state of their program, and it'll be interesting to see what happens if they're, you know, so blah again this year, or maybe, you know, not even average, I guess.
Anything else to add, Scott?
No, I think that's about all we need to talk about with the unsexy Kansas State Wildcats.
What's the last time we're going to talk about them? So we had to get everything out.
Yeah, you had to get everything out right then. Travis, why don't you tell me about Oklahoma?
Yeah, so last year for Oklahoma went about as poorly as I think anybody could have predicted, but it wasn't totally out of line coming off that final 4 year when you lose three starters, including a, you know, an all-program type guy like Buddy Hield. They knew things were going to be difficult last year, and they got even more difficult when arguably their best player, and I think probably their most important player, Jordan Woodard, you know, missed a ton of time with injury and probably wasn't healthy when he was on the floor. And I think, you know, they were finished ninth in the Big 12, and it was just a struggle for them all season long. But, you know, with the silver lining of that is they got just about everybody back. I think there's a lot of interesting pieces on this team returning, a lot of intriguing guys. But, you know, Rob, you mentioned it earlier. The biggest thing that Oklahoma has going for it right now is Trae Young, a McDonald's All-American five-star that grew up in the shadow of the Lloyd Noble Center at Norman North High School in Oklahoma. He's a likely one-and-done type player. It'll be interesting to see how everything kind of coalesces for Oklahoma this year when you've got, you know, Young kind of coming in with, you know, there's only one senior on the roster, and that's Kadeem Latin, a nice forward, that's not going to, you know, light up the scoreboard, but he's one of those guys that will do the dirty work inside. And you pair him with the likes of Cameron McGusty, who I think was a pleasant surprise for them last year in a bigger role, than they probably guessed, and Christian Doolittle. You know, this has got the makings of a nice little team, and I really like Christian James, who disappointed me a little bit last year, but I think he's got a really nice skill set and is a really talented guy. So you put all those together, and I think if you've got Trae Young is able to carry them to another level as, you know, an incredibly talented point guard, I think you're looking at not only an NCAA tournament appearance, but at least one victory for the Sooners in the Big Dance this year.
Here's my question with Oklahoma, and specifically with Trae Young. Is he, and Scott, you might be able to answer this better, is he the kind of point guard that makes people around him better? Because I'm not convinced that he is. And if he's not the kind of guy that can make people around him better, is he talented enough as a freshman to come in and kind of like take that team over and average 19 points and get them, you know, to the top half of the Big 12 and maybe into the NCAA tournament picture? What's your take on that, Scott?
I think he does make other people better. He's not a traditional Tyus Jones, you know, run a half court set, find a guy for a look type of point guard. But with the amount of pressure that he's able to put on the defense with his ability to shoot from basically anywhere once he crosses half court, that's going to draw a lot of attention this season, especially if he gets hot early. He's going to be, to me, the most fascinating freshman in the country this season. These other guys have the physical tools where we kind of know where they're going to stand, where we know what their production is going to be. With Trae Young, it's all about his skill level. If he's able to hit shots where he's coming across half court and knocking down some of those crazy Steph Curry 28 to 30 footers, then all of a sudden it opens up so much more for the rest of Oklahoma's offense. And they have a lot of dangerous pieces around him in guys like McGusty and Doolittle and Odoms who can really get going.
Yeah, because I like the makeup of this roster, right? Like, I think what they were lacking last year was a star, a guy that they could build everyone around. Like, and no disrespect to Jordan Woodard. Like, I really thought that he was a good point guard. But he's not that guy. Like, he's not a guy that could carry a team and you know, carry a program over the course of an entire season the way that, you know, like a Buddy Hield can. And what I'm wondering if Trae Young is going to end up being that guy. Because just on paper, the way that it's built is like you have a bunch of veteran pieces, a bunch of guys that played a big role last year that got pushed out of their comfort zone, that had a chance to learn about themselves, that got better over the course of the year. Like, didn't they almost beat Kansas at home at the end of last season? Am I remembering that right? I'm pretty sure they almost picked Kansas off. Regardless, whatever. They got better throughout the year, and now they have a chance to come in and go back to being like what they're better suited to being and kind of just like a role guy with the star there on the roster with them. I don't know if Trae Young is quite good enough to come in and be that level of a player just yet. I think he's more of a guy that can come in and average like 12 to 13 points and would be better suited as maybe being the second best option on the team than coming in and being the superstar. But I don't know. Well, I guess we'll end up seeing how that plays out. Let's move on, though. Talk about Oklahoma State. Scott, that is you.
Oklahoma State's going to have a very interesting season after the loss of Brad Underwood to Illinois only after 1 year at the helm of the Cowboys. They opted to stay in-house by hiring Mike Boynton Jr., his former assistant, to take over the program. A hire that was met with a little bit with question marks, as Boynton doesn't really have a head coaching background and wasn't really sought after by a lot of other programs. That being said, there's still some talent on the roster. They will have to replace Juwan Evans, who was tremendous last season, the type of point guard who was arguably the best in the Big 12 outside of Frank Mason. Phil Forte, experienced shooter, will also be gone. He averaged double-figure minutes and was able to space the floor for the Cowboys. Leighton Hammonds, another forward who is gone for them as well. The good news is that Jeffrey Carroll will be back for his senior season. He was a breakout player under Underwood last season. He averaged around 18 points a game and 7 rebounds per contest, so he does have the production where he should be at least the go-to guy for the Cowboys at the start of the season. From there are more question marks, especially on the interior. Mitchell Solomon will be returning for his senior season after starting a lot down low last season, but he didn't really have a lot of help at times. They had to go to some small ball lineups, playing guys like Cameron McGriff at the four. This season it's again going to be a question mark as to who kind of helps Solomon on the interior. Yankuba Sima is a transfer from St. John's who was eligible at the semester break, who should be able to at least come in and provide some rim protection to help with Solomon down low. Replacing Evans at the point guard will be another major task for Oklahoma State State this season. Kendall Smith, a graduate transfer from Cal State Northridge, will get a crack at it. Brandon Averett was a capable backup for Evans a year ago, as he's now a sophomore returning. And the Cowboys also bring in Zach Dawson, who is a talented four-star guard from Miami, who is capable of playing a little bit of both guard spots. I think he's a little more suited off the ball, but it'll be interesting to see where Oklahoma State places him early in the season. Devon Dillard is another guard who returns in the rotation who could be intriguing this season. He provides athleticism as well. Again, with a new head coach, with replacing some of the better players in the Big 12 from last season, I don't have a lot of high hopes for Oklahoma State this season. My bold prediction is that they finish last in the Big 12. I think their point guard situation is very uncertain. Their upfront situation is even more unstable, and they're going to have a lot of growing pains this year in Boynton's first season.
Yeah, I don't know how you can really argue any other way with that. Travis, you got a take on it?
No, I mean, I think Scott was absolutely right. And I think, you know, the bigger issue, the big picture issue for Oklahoma State is, you know, what do they want to do with their basketball program? Because the reason Brad Underwood left was because he was underpaid and they weren't going to give him the deal that he was looking for. And then, you know, at that point, you've got an opportunity to make a statement if you're Oklahoma State to say, no, basketball does matter to us. Brad was just mistaken. And then you elevate his assistant. And, you know, I think he's making less than $1 million a year, or right around $1 million a year. That doesn't exactly scream priority. And that's got to be frustrating for fans that, you know, came up under the Sutton years of when that building was rocking. And it's very far from that at this point.
Yeah, and they were a little bit handicapped. Like, I think they're gun-shy when it comes to buying into a big contract like that. Like, the one that Brad Underwood signed last year, I want to say it was for 5 years for right around $6 million a year, which is like half of what most Big 12 coaches end up getting paid. And I believe Mike Boynton, and someone can double check on this for me, but I believe Mike Boynton is making $700,000 a year on his contract. And like, that's just not competitive in the Big 12. And I think you're
it's
exactly
not
right.
It's not competitive in high major basketball. Travis hit it right on the head. It's a joke is what it is. A lot of people thought that was a head-scratching hire, and they didn't put the money forth to make a real commitment to basketball.
The other thing to look for this season with Oklahoma State is their involvement with this FBI scandal. Obviously, Lamont Evans, an assistant coach, formerly, maybe he's still officially an employee, but he was on that staff for a year and was involved in that FBI complaint. They were subpoenaed by a grand jury from New York. And it still remains unclear exactly what is going to happen with that that FBI investigation. But if there are accusations that they can tie directly to Lamont Evans and the Oklahoma State basketball program, the school and the team may end up being the ones that kind of have to face some of that punishment. So that's definitely going to be a storyline that you need to track throughout the season. All right, let's move on. It's my turn. I'm going to be talking about Texas. And to me, the Longhorns are really, really, really fascinating this season. They lost Tevin Mack. He left probably about midseason last year, which kind of might be addition by subtraction. And they also lost Jared Allen, who was their best freshman last year. I think he was what, like the 17th pick in the draft, 21st pick in the draft, somewhere around there, mid to late first round pick. But they bring basically everybody else back, right? Andrew Jones, a former four-star recruit, is back. They get Kerwin Roach back. They get Eric Davis back. They get Jacob Young back. They have James Young back. They have a lot of young, talented pieces back, right? And then they also happen to bring in two things that they really, really needed in what I believe is a very good five-man recruiting class. And that is Matt Coleman, who is actually a natural point guard that they're going to be able to play in that position this year, and Mo Bamba, who is probably going to end up being the best defensive prospect in the 2018 NBA draft. And I think Bamba's presence to me is kind of what changed everything and my outlook for this team, because I think he's got a chance to be like a Rudy Gobert-esque kind of player and kind of a presence. He's 7'1" with a 7'9" wingspan. He is elite of the elite of the elite when we're talking about like a rim protector and a prospect on that end of the floor in the paint. And with his length and his ability to protect the rim, what that does is it changes everything for what Texas can do defensively. You know, now all of a sudden, all these athletes and all these perimeter players and all these guys who in a vacuum looked like they should be good defensive players, now Shaka can have them running around and taking some more risks and gambling a little bit more defensively, and, you know, trying to jump passing lanes and trying to play a little bit more of that Havoc style that I don't think we really have seen Texas play just yet, because now they know they have that eraser at the rim. You know, if you're Kerwin Roach, that's a really hard name to say, by the way, Kerwin Roach. If you're Kerwin Roach and you try to jump a passing lane, or you get aggressive and you try to make a steal and you end up getting beat on the perimeter, right? You're really not all that concerned about it, because you know that if that guy goes all the way to the rim, he's going to have to try to finish over Mo Bamba. And, like, you know how hard it's going to be to finish over Mo Bamba? That's not exactly ideal to do. And it's not just that, like, Andrew Jones is back. Andrew Jones was, what, like a borderline five-star, kind of a one-and-done potential recruit coming in last year, like a combo guard. It's not just that he's back, too. It's that Matt Coleman's back to take over point guard duties. It's that they have three other four-star freshmen coming in. They got Tulane transferred Dylan Osakowski. Is going to be eligible. Jacob Young is back. James Banks, who was a former top 50 kid, is back. Jericho Sims. Jesse Febres, did I say that right, Scott?
Jace Febres, I believe.
Jace Febres, Jericho Sims, Royce Hamm. Like, they have talent in this program. So what Bamba did for me was made it so that Texas was actually going to be relevant this year. But when you look at also some of the kids they have committed, they have three guys already in the class of 2018. So not only are they going to have a chance to be good this year, but I think Shaka has finally kind of like set down roots in terms of the fact that Texas might actually be good moving forward now. Like, now you can look at this Texas program and say, okay, not only are they going to be in the mix for being a top 25 team this year, they actually have the foundation for something that could end up being really, really good down the road. So I'm bullish on this Texas program. I'm bullish on this Texas team. And my bold prediction for this group is that they're going to end up finishing third in the Big 12 behind Kansas and West Virginia. Scott, why don't you give me your take on that?
I like the front court depth that Texas has brought into place besides Bamba. I think Dylan Osakowski, a transfer from Tulane, really helps with their physicality down low. He's a 6'9" banger that they kind of didn't have last season when they were playing so many small ball lineups. And, you know, between Bamba and Osakowski, and then having guys like James Banks back with, you know, guys like Jericho Sims and Royce Hamm in the front court, this front court should be significantly improved from last season in terms of depth and star power. And I really like Bamba not only as a rim protector, but laterally. He moves so well for a guy his size and with his wingspan. He's the type of guy who I've seen switch out onto perimeter players like Brian Bowen and smother them before. So, you know, Texas can do a whole bunch of different unique things with Bamba in the lineup, not just with him as a rim protector, but also as a guy who can maybe switch and drive some guys out on hedges and things like that.
Travis, you got any take on Texas?
So I'm really going to be intrigued what the Longhorns are going to be this year. Like, Mo Bamba obviously gets a lot of the attention, but Coleman at point guard, I think, will be really intriguing as well. And it'll be now in what, year three for Shaka Smart. I think it's time for them to take that next step forward. And I think they've done enough on the recruiting trail to, for those expectations to kind of go in to this year. And I'm high on Texas. I think that they're going to be a top, you know, three team in the league probably. So I think it's time for them to really get going and get this Shaka Smart era kickstarted.
Well, good. We agree on where Texas is going to finish in the league. I don't know if we agree on where TCU is going to finish in the league. Travis, why don't you tell me about them?
TCU is another team I really like. I think they were in the cellar, you know, when they made the move from the Mountain West to the Big 12. This was one of those games for the rest of the league that you could count on two wins in that round robin. And now I think in year two, and even last year under Jamie Dixon, things have changed. They're recruiting at a different level. They've got a new arena that I think it really shows that TCU is investing in basketball. Like we talked about with Oklahoma State earlier, I don't know if that's the case there. You can't make that argument against TCU anymore. They went from taking commercial flights to almost every game to now chartering, and they've got this new arena. So I think that there's a lot of excitement around TCU, and it's more than just the off the court stuff. They're bringing back a ton from last year. It starts with Vlad Brodznianski in the middle. You know, he's a guy that can go for 20 and 10 any given night in the Big 12. I think they really, really like their point guard in Jalen Fisher, who was a high four star. I think Scott would probably know better, but a highly recruited point guard that was solid last year as a freshman is going to be asked to do a little bit more again this year. And then you got guys like Kenrich Williams, who really stepped up last year for TCU and really asserted himself as a potential all-big player, all-Big 12 player this year. Alex Robinson, JD Miller. I think there's a lot to like about this TCU roster, especially when you see how far they've come in just a little over a year now in Jamie Dixon's tenure there, back at his alma mater, which I don't know that they've been back to the tournament since he left as a player in the 80s. So it's there's a lot of hope there in Fort Worth. So my bold prediction is that TCU gets back to the NCAA tournament, and I actually think that they make a run to the Sweet 16.
Wow, look at you. Scott, what's your take?
I like this team quite a bit. Maybe not as much as Travis does, but I think that they do have a lot of pieces that work well together. You know, you talk about their success winning the NIT title last year, and I think they deserve a lot of credit, too, for being able to replace Jalen Fisher after he broke his wrist early in that run. They were able to kind of place Desmond Bain at the point guard spot and still win some games. So I think that this group has some interchangeable pieces. They made a run in some postseason success last year, and they should be able to take another leap forward this year.
Yeah, and Travis, I think the most interesting thing was what you mentioned with the amount of investment that's coming into that program. Like, we saw what happened with SMU when SMU started taking basketball seriously. Now, TCU is starting to take basketball seriously, and I'll tell you what, there was as much talent coming out of, like, that Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, what do they call it, the Metroplex or something?
Metroplex.
Yeah, yep. There's as much talent coming out of the Metroplex right now as there is, like, anywhere else in the country, so... If TCU can kind of like build up that brand and start getting some of those kids from that area and start keeping some of the kids from Texas in state and keeping them from going to Texas, or, you know, maybe get some of the guys that Texas A&M has gotten in the past, whatever. There's enough talent there to go around. And if they're investing in the program and they've decided that they want to, you know, kind of do what SMU has done and grow the basketball program within that school, I think that it's something they certainly have the ability to do. And I'll tell you what. Jamie Dixon and Pitt, I wonder if those Pitt fans are kind of regretting running him out of town now, seeing what he's done with TCU and seeing what Pitt has kind of turned into without him there. All right, let's move on. Scott, I believe this is you, and you're going to be telling us all about Texas Tech, right?
Chris Beard will be in his second season with the Red Raiders. A little bit disappointing in terms of their finish last year with how they lost so many close games and blew so many second-half leads. They were 6-12 in conference play after a 14-4 start. They did have some ups and downs throughout the course of the year. They had the win over Baylor. They had the one-point loss to Kansas, but they just never really seemed to get over the hump and assert themselves as a tried-and-true NCAA tournament team. This year, things will be looking to be different for the Red Raiders. They have a lot of senior leadership back. Keenan Evans is back at the guard after playing a tremendous season last year as a junior. He's a marksman from three-point range. He can get other guys involved. He's the type of guy who can be a go-to scorer for the Red Raiders. Zach Smith also returns in the front court for them. He's a double-double threat who has a little bit more NBA potential than I think people give him credit for. He's a long and rangy 6'8", can cover a lot of different ground and a lot of different guys in that league. Justin Gray, another veteran senior forward, returns as well. He's been a solid rotation piece. And Yem Stevenson is a backup senior guard who received heavy minutes last year. And this team's front court gets the addition of two seniors who sat out most of last season. Nerenze Odiase, who's a double-digit scorer and has the type of post balance that they maybe didn't see last season. And Tommy Hamilton, a transfer from DePaul, who was inconsistent during his time with the Blue Demons, but is also capable of flashes on the offensive side of the ball. The key for the Red Raiders could be finding those pieces that go around the guys that they bring back. Evans and Smith should be the type of guys that you build around. Gray and Stevenson are solid. If they can get production from some of those front court guys and some of the guards that they've brought in, including a junior college transfer in Hyron Edwards and an Italian point guard, David Moretti, who showed some flashes of strong play at the FIBA U19 World Cup this summer, then they could surprise some people. My bold prediction is that I think Texas Tech sneaks in the NCAA tournament this season. I think they have a lot of depth and experience, and they're an intriguing team. And I think that Chris Beard is able to implement some more stuff in his second year after this team had so much chaos with five head coaches in 7 years.
Travis, what's your take?
I agree with Scott, and I love the fit of Chris Beard there at Texas Tech. I think his style of play, his demeanor, and the way that he can recruit is really going to lend itself well to Texas Tech, because I don't know that you're going to be able to ever consistently pull super skilled guys to Lubbock, Texas, but you can mine the junior college ranks. You can have tough guys. You can grow the program, you know, where you're consistently having older, mature, tough dudes in there, and you can win some games, win a lot of games in the Big 12 with that philosophy and that strategy. And I think Chris Beard is really the guy to do that there. So I don't know if they get to the NCAA tournament this year, but you know, I really like their roster, you know, for the way that Chris Beard's put it together. And I think that the future there is brighter than even when they were having a little bit of success under Tubby Smith probably ever was. I think the ceiling's a little higher.
All right, let's move along. The last team in the Big 12 is going to end up being West Virginia. I'm going to tell you guys about them. We know what West Virginia is at this point, I think. You know, the whole Press Virginia brand that they've kind of developed, they're all over the floor, bodies after bodies after bodies after bodies coming in waves at you. You know, the pressing, the fouling, the up-tempo style of play, they're trying to wear out your legs. You know what you're going to get when you play against West Virginia. The good news for them is they have Javon Carter back. He is a guy that could end up being the Big 12 Player of the Year this year. I don't think that is something that's crazy to say. He's probably going to end up being West Virginia's leading scorer. He's one of the best on-ball defenders in the conference. Like, he's kind of the guy that makes that system tick for them this year. The big thing with them, though, is that they lost a couple pieces, right? Nathan Adrian is gone. He's the guy that kind of, you know, ran the point for that press, was a really valuable piece for them in terms of, you know, what he was able to do defensively, how he was able to spread the floor on the offensive end of the floor, how hard he played, kind of that veteran leadership he had. And they lose Tariq Phillip too, another, and I believe Tavon Myers is gone. So they have some of those guys in the backcourt that were those little spark plugs that can get out and run all day, that can just be real pests defensively. Like, those guys are gone. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. It's also going to hurt them that Asa Ahmad is not going to be eligible to play in the first semester. I believe that's because he did not get the grades. It was academics, right? Yeah, so he's not going to be eligible to play. But the big thing about about West Virginia, and it was kind of similar to what VCU was under Shaka Smart, is that I don't think the names are as important as the players, or as important as the fact that it's West Virginia, right? Like, I think that the way that Bobby Huggins coaches this team, and the way he develops this team, and the way that he's built this team is that, I know it's kind of cliche, but it's very much next man up, right? Like, it doesn't really matter who the guy is. It just matters that there is somebody there that's going to buy in and play the way that he wants to play. So maybe losing Asa Ahmad means that they're going to struggle a little bit to score offensively, and you know, maybe without Tariq Phillip, they're not going to be quite as good on the defensive end of the floor, but you're still going to get what you're going to get because you know that they're going to have guys that are going to come in, and Bobby Huggins is going to have guys that are athletic and tough and willing to play the way that he wants to play. With him, I just think it's more about effort than it is necessarily about the talent, and I think that that means that you can lose some of these guys that play a lot of minutes, and it's not going to really affect what you are as a program. Like, each of the last 3 years, they've lost important players, and look, here they are. They're still the second-best team in the Big 12, you know, 3 years after Huggins started playing this way. So I don't necessarily think that losing the pieces that they've lost are going to hurt them. What I'm curious about, and I want to get your guys' takes on, is that I think that there's just very much a ceiling to what West Virginia is going to be, the same way that I thought that there was a ceiling to what VCU could be under Shaka Smart. I think with the way that basketball is going, that pressing teams that play this kind of all-out pressing style, they have a ceiling because what you're relying on is you're basically trying to, you know, make teams make mistakes, right? That's what you thrive on. You have to be able to turn teams over in your press. You have to be able to make their guards uncomfortable, to make their guards throw the ball away, to create live ball turnovers for a couple reasons. One, if you're gambling in a press like that and you get that press beaten, you're going to have 2-on-1 breaks and 3-on-2 breaks and numbers and advantages, and you're just not going to be drilled the same way defensively that you would be if you were a team like the Pack Line. Like, you're going to give up a much higher percentage of easy buckets and good looks at the rim, whether it's, you know, layups or open threes, catch and shoot rhythm threes, right? And the other part of it is offensively. If you're West Virginia and you're not creating those turnovers, you're not going to be getting layups, and you're not going to be getting your own transition opportunities and numbers opportunities and, you know, driving kick rhythm transition threes. You're not going to be getting that as much if you're West Virginia. So if you can't force other teams to make mistakes, then your system doesn't work as well as it should. And the difference between bad basketball teams and good basketball teams is usually that the good teams have good guard play, right? And when you have good guards or great guards, they don't make mistakes. They don't turn the ball over as much. So I have a hard time looking at West Virginia and saying, okay, I think this team can eventually win a national title playing this way, because I just wonder if they're going to be able to create enough mistakes against teams that are good enough to get to the Sweet 16, or teams that are good enough to get to the Elite Eight, or get to the Final Four, or get to a national title game, right? I just think that there's a certain ceiling, because I don't know how many times they can go and beat teams that aren't going to beat themselves. So I think that at some point that West Virginia is just kind of like what they are. They're going to be good, but I don't know if we're going to get past what their ceiling is right now, which is probably the Sweet 16. So I'm going to say, as my bold prediction, is that West Virginia this year, despite being the second best team in the Big 12, is not going to get out of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. Scott, why don't you tell me about what you think of the Mountaineers?
I'm very high on this team personally. I think Javon Carter is slept on in terms of the national conversation, and he should be in the preseason All-American picture given the way that he is defensively as well as how he's improved offensively. For me, that young front court is the key to everything. You mentioned Ahmad being out. That hurts for them, but they're relying on a lot of sophomores and guys that we saw glimpses of last year. Guys like Lamont West, who had six threes against Oklahoma State in some games and didn't show up in others. So I want to see who kind of turns into the consistent force of that front court, especially early in the season. I think we know what to expect from the back court and the press, but if this front court isn't as good as advertised, I think this West Virginia team could be in for a bit of a letdown.
Travis?
Yeah, I mean, Rob, to go back to your point about the ceiling for pressing teams, like the way that I look at it is that it's built on creating chaos when teams press the way that West Virginia does, and they're essentially betting on that they can control the chaos to a greater degree than their opponents can. And I think the danger of that is sometimes that, you know, chaos by its, you know, definition, sometimes you can't tame it. So that allows like a Stephen F. Austin to beat you, or it allows, you know, when you play a more talented team with veteran ball handlers or veteran coaches, that they can control that better than you can. And I think that's where teams run into problems with the style of a VCU or a West Virginia. And that's, I don't know that I'd call it a ceiling, but I think it creates a higher degree of variable that they can't control. And when you can't control that, I think things get dicey.
And just to elaborate on that, I think what we saw at the end of the Gonzaga game kind of buries that point home, right? At the end of the Sweet 16 last year, if you guys remember, Javon Carter, like, more or less dribbled out the last 37 seconds of the game. I think he got off three air balls from three when they were down by three. And to me, the idea that West Virginia wasn't able to make anything happen in the half court, because what they do to rely for offense is basically rely on, like, forcing live ball turnovers, getting transition opportunities, getting numbers, being able to attack when you don't have the pieces back to be able to stop them. You know, when Gonzaga was set, Gonzaga was one of the best teams in college basketball last year, and they were able to keep West Virginia for 37 seconds from being able to get a good shot or a clean shot at the rim. So I think that West Virginia, and it's not just West Virginia. I think that any team that plays like that, that with that all-out pressing mentality, you know, the VCU teams when Shaka was doing havoc there. And to be clear, when Shaka Smart made the Final Four with VCU, like, that wasn't havoc the way that we know what havoc could be afterwards. Like, that was the team that didn't have the same kind of athleticism and didn't have Briante Weber at the point and wasn't forcing turnovers like that and wasn't defending like that. They had Joey Rodriguez at the point and Jamie Skeen playing like a stretch five where they spread the floor, ran a bunch of screen and rolls, and, you know, got hot at the right time and banged a bunch of threes. So I just don't know if pressing teams, the way basketball is headed, with teams playing two point guards together, with teams prioritizing the ability to be skilled and handle the ball and positionless basketball, I just don't know if you're going to be able to win at the highest level the way that West Virginia wants to win and be a pressing team. But, hey, you know what? I've been wrong plenty of times, so we'll be it'll be interesting to see how that ends up playing out. But we've kept you guys here for long enough. You can find Scott on Twitter at Phillips Hoops. You can find Travis on Twitter at TravisHines21. You can find this podcast in Stitcher, in Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get podcasts for free. You can find this one, so please rate it, review it. It helps us out with the metrics in those apps. You get these podcasts for free. All we're asking is for one little click of your thumb to help us out and make our day a little bit better. So for Scott and for Travis, we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll be back next week with the Big East.